Constant but never ascendant, unconcerned with macho posturing, all the while secreting its fingerprints across popular culture. That's how Roger Bennett and Eli Horowitz characterize ping pong, the subject of their new book, Everything You Know Is Pong, How Mighty Table Tennis Shapes Our World. The authors have gathered, perhaps crouching as if preparing to receive serve, at NPR's New York Bureau. Roger Bennett, welcome back to Only a Game.
Thanks for having us, Bill.
And Eli Horowitz, welcome to you as well.
It's a thrill to be here.
Roger, how did it first occur to either or both of you that all the world could be explored, if not entirely explained, by means of ping pong?
Eli and I share many things in common. He lives in San Francisco, I live in New York, and the thing that bonded us was that separately to begin with, but then once we met, we started to collect ping pong ephemera, flotsam and jetsam, thrown off by the game since really the 1890s onwards. And the more we collected, the more we realized that the ping pong was really like a secreted DNA that was, when kind of furled together, could tell many of the mighty stories which shape our world. We were able to code together the stories about the rise of the great American suburb in the 1950s, China's unstoppable rise, all the way through to Atari and their invention of the video games, without which our lives would be meaningless. Ping pong was at the center of them all.
Well, we will get to some of these extremely important matters eventually. But first, Eli, can you explain, please, the theory put forth in Chapter 5 that playing ping pong reverses the aging process?
It's a multi-step thing. There are a few ways of looking at it. One is it's promoting brain activity, and there's been a lot of neurological research even doing MRIs before and after playing ping pong, and it's actually showing that it's increased blood flow, increased brain plasticity, all these things as a result of ping pong. It was in this Japanese journal, Biomekanazu. And there's graphs and data and everything. It's peer-reviewed.
Well, it has graphs and data and everything, so who can argue with it?
We would accept nothing less.
Roger, you established the connection between ping pong and politics immediately in this book with a reference to ping pong diplomacy back in 1971. You write, and I'm quoting now, "Nixon's corpse began rotting decades before his death, and Kissinger will soon face eternal justice." Any worries that you might lose some readers very early on?
I think we'll probably gain them, to be honest, when you read out that quote so beautifully. And the ping pong diplomacy was a remarkable period. China is not a natural lover of ping pong, but the whole thing was a fabricated and rather cunning plan by Chairman Mao, who realized that China needed a sport to become world champion at in the 50s, and he was fishing around for what that could be. And he realized that the Holocaust had put a dent to the traditional champions of the game. In the 1930s and 40s, they were all Jewish, Austro-Hungarian mostly. Across the country in the early 50s, he sent ambassadors to every kindergarten across China, 12,000 of them, made kids test their reflexes with coins on the old elbow. Those that could catch them were whisked away to 14 ping pong academies he'd set up across the country. And within 5 years, the Chinese went from a country who had no real interest in the game to becoming world champions with Rong Guoton, and they've never really looked back.
No less remarkable is the assertion, and again I'm quoting, that ping pong is usually at the forefront of any fundamental shift in human experience, be it technological, political, or romantic. You want to buttress that proposition?
For example, with technological, we look at video games. The very first video game was in 1958 at the Brookhaven National Laboratory.
Where they had nothing else to do.
They had very little to do, and they were just trying to pass some time, and it ended up being basically a ping pong game. Unfortunately, they called it Tennis for Two, and so it was very unpopular. It was dismantled 2 years later. Then for the next 10 years, video game developers tried all these other games, space games, boxing games, hunting games. No one wanted to play them. It was only in 1971 with the creation of Pong that people were willing to reapproach video games, to take the leap to this new kind of entertainment. And it was because they married the cold technology of video games to the warm beating heart of ping pong. Even now they're doing experiments, this is for real, where people can control computers directly from their brain, quadriplegics and so forth, and the game they've used to test this new development is Pong and ping pong.
You know, I can say from experience that it is safer to play the video game Pong when drunk than it is to play ping pong when drunk.
Bill, that's a story that needs to be told. But again, it was one of the joys of this book, one of the stories that we uncovered in collecting the materials, particularly the advertising materials from the 1940s, late 40s, early 50s, the architects and engineers and real estate developers who were unfurling mile after mile of great American suburb. They had a marketing challenge. They didn't know how to coax people out of the city, in that they couldn't show the actual houses they were building because all they were cookie-cutter houses. And they almost, to an ad, realized that what they could sell to the American city dweller was the one thing that he and she didn't have in the city, which was space. And what bespoke space more than the basement? And what showed good times in the old basement than the American family rallying together in that basement around the ping pong table? And we have a chapter which was we gathered over 500 images that were very, very similar. It's always the kids, Bobby and Sally, whacking the ball backwards and forwards, beating good old Dad, who was completely confused by the game, while Mum came in her apron to serve up some muffins, looking very, very jolly. Mm. And right there, the great American suburban family myth is coaxed, and it's all forged in ping pong.
How is it that nobody previously discovered how central ping pong has been to progress of all kinds?
I think the key to that is that ping pong has never been kind of marketed and commodified the way all the other big sports have been. TV was never able to shine the spotlight on it, and so it could flourish in all these different ways, grow up in this diverse, heterogeneous way in all the different spots in the world. And so it didn't have that glare and that spotlight to pull all those strands together and to blandify it.
Blandify.
And that's why these blandify. And so instead it was all these little breadcrumbs, and we would just follow the breadcrumbs one by one and find these larger stories, you know, running all the way from the basement to the world championships, and it all kind of unites.
Roger, in the acknowledgement section of Everything You Know Is Pong, you, well, acknowledge that you no longer play the game. Why not?
Phil, this is a very, very emotional story for me.
You're going into dangerous territory here. Mm.
Ping pong was my life when I was growing up, like many fine young gentlemen growing up in 1980s Liverpool. I played often. I played very aggressively. It definitely brought out my violent side. And I got into a final, a city final. I played an opponent who I knew was lesser. But in the final, with everybody watching, I choked. Couldn't finish off my shots. They were all chipping into the net. And I had the out-of-body experience of just knowing I was going to lose. And I did what anybody would do in the early 80s in such a situation, what we've been taught to do by one John McEnroe. I lost with no self-respect, with no self-control. Bats were broken, balls were smashed, half the table was turned over. And I walked over to my family, sobbing. My father just looked at me and he told me, "You've just disgraced the family name." Not by losing, which is what I thought he meant originally, but by the way I lost. Mm. And I never, ever held a paddle again. I started collecting almost immediately. And to me, this collection that we've amassed together, Eli and I, of ping pong ephemera, kind of grew out of that moment.
This book was commissioned originally by Roger's psychiatrist, actually. It's just been a way of him working through some of these issues, and I'm glad that you are enabling that process.
It's been very healing, Bill.
Roger Bennett and Eli Horowitz are the co-authors of Everything You Know Is Pong, How Mighty Table Tennis Shapes Our World. It's published by HarperCollins, and the authors joined me from NPR's New York Bureau. Roger, thank you very much.
Bill, thank you for having us on.
And Eli, thank you as well.
It's been great.
Ping pong, ping pong.
Only a Game is produced by Karen Given and Doug Trabu. Our technical director is John Perotti. Jack Flagler is our intern. We had help this week from Paul Vikas. Our senior producer is Gary Wallach. To view Karen Givens' Cullen Jones photo gallery, subscribe to the Only a Game podcast, listen to archived shows and stories, or learn more about our weekly music selections, please visit our website, onlyagame.org. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Only a Game Radio. Our final word comes from Everything You Know Is Pong author Roger Bennett.
If you only buy one ping pong book this year, you should consider making this the one.
Darn, it's too late. This year I've already purchased A Pong Runs Through It, Pong of the South, and All the King's Paddlers. I'm Bill Littlefield. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Support comes from LendingTree, providing up to 4 loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 800-555-TREE. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And American Jewish World Service, supporting local solutions to global challenges at ajws.org. This is NPR.